I'm Stella, compulsive overeater, restrictor, and sugar addict. And thank you for allowing me to speak today. I've really been thinking about, what I should say and how I should say it. And, I've just decided that I'm gonna share my story, just speak my truth. And so please take that as my story and my recovery, and, take whatever you can use and leave the rest. So I think I'm gonna go all the way back, all the way back to the womb, which is because I do think that when I was born, I was already, already had a disposition at least to become a compulsive eater or an emotional eater. My mom was pregnant with me during the AIDS epidemic, and she has shared stories with me of her sitting and watching We Are the World and, binge eating and feeling like crap. So, that's kind of what I was prompted with already in the womb. And then, when I was born and was breastfed, like I also had these stories of me like taking in too much and throwing up already as a baby. And my mom has, eating issues, whatever you would call them, because she hasn't defined it herself. But I just remember growing up in a house with, a lot of restrictions. So we weren't allowed to eat sugar, and it was, my mom was trying to find like a way to eat which would work for her and a way to lose weight. And I saw all of that. And at home, even if someone brought us something, my mom would like take it away and say, "My kids don't eat sugar," and then she would probably eat it herself later. But that's kind of the message that I got. So when I was in any place where I would be allowed to eat something, or at birthdays where my mom had let up trying to have us eat something else when everyone else got something, then I would overeat. So, early memories of me just, coming home from birthdays with my dress in a bag because I had overeaten and thrown up on myself. But I was very active as a kid, and as I said, my mom had, rules at home. So it wasn't until around puberty that I started gaining weight. And that really bothered me. And it didn't become an issue until there was like a boy who pointed out to me that I was fat. And I was like, he's crazy. But then I asked my mom, and she, I don't think she meant anything by it, but she kind of told me like, "Well, you might have gained a little around the waist, kind of." And then it was like confirmed to me that I needed to do something about my body. And I couldn't stop eating. So I started purging, and I thought that's a fantastic way of controlling this. So I would eat and I would throw up. And I was probably around 12 when that happened, when that started. And that went on for years and years and years. Where I was just gaining a little weight and gaining a little weight, but never like never like, never having it be out of control, but I was using like incredible amounts of energy on maintaining this or trying to control something. And then when I was 16 or something like that, I'm kind of like my world fell apart, as it can do for a 16-year-old. So I moved to a new place. I started a new school where I didn't get any friends. I moved from my mom to my dad's, and we didn't have a good connection. And then to top it off, my boyfriend broke up with me through a text. And my world just fell apart. And I thought, well, there's nothing I can control here, but I can control my food. So I stopped eating. And about, a week into just not eating at all, I got braces, so my mouth hurt a lot. So I couldn't eat. And then 2 weeks into this, I thought like, this is easy. I can go being hungry. And in a very short period of time, I lost a lot of weight. And I remember getting a lot of positive attention because of this. And, you know, people were telling me I looked good and whatever I was doing, it was working. And, you know, I was finally in the body that I always wanted to be in. And I looked at myself in the mirror and I felt completely empty. Completely empty. And it's kind of stuck with me always that already there I knew that, you know, food wasn't the problem, food wasn't the solution, you know, being in the right sized body, you know, that wasn't going to fix my life. But of course, that didn't stop me from, you know, binging and purging and, you know, trying to control my weight and you know, the rest of my teens and the beginning of my 20s, you know, I did everything. I was only protein shakes. I would go on diet after diet, have a personal trainer, do a food diary. I mean, you name it, like the no diet diet, you know, I did like everything, and nothing worked. And then I got pregnant. So when I was 23 years old, I got pregnant, and it was a child we wanted. I was in a relationship with someone, and I had, you know, I had babysat a lot of kids, and especially boys, and I was so sure I was going to have a boy. I was just like, that was it. I was going to have a boy. And then when I was around 20 weeks pregnant, I had an ultrasound and found out it was a girl. And I couldn't, like, I freaked out. I couldn't sleep. I had panic attacks. I actually said to the midwife, like, check again, please. I didn't believe it. And I waited like 7 weeks to tell anyone, like, until I had like a second opinion ultrasound. And they were like, no, I've never seen a boy like this. Like, it's a girl. And I realized, like, what was freaking me out is I had no idea how to be a mother to a girl. Because I had no idea how to be a girl myself. I had no idea how to be in a body. I didn't even know how to feed myself. And I just like made the radical decision that I need to figure this out for my daughter. You know, whatever that entails, it's, you know, she's not going to learn this crap from me. And if I have to teach her, if I'm going to have to be able to teach her, I have to learn it myself. And I actually, you know, we packed up and moved abroad and, you know, left my family. And, you know, it was kind of like, you know, I was fleeing. You know, I wanted to be in a different place raising her. I didn't know what was wrong with my family or my family-in-law, but there was something wrong with them. And I didn't know what it was. And I wanted to be able to do this. And then, you know, I had her and everything, like, I say everything was fine in the beginning, but of course I wasn't able to control my food. You know, I still had this thought of like, I was going to start studying after maternity leave. And, you know, I was like, I'm going to get in shape and I'm going to be like the fittest I've ever been. And it didn't work. It just didn't work. And I think that's kind of like, you know, I already knew 12-step programs. I had, you know, been to meetings because of, you know, codependency, but not because of anything of my own. Like, I knew there were addicts around me, but I didn't have anything. You know, I was just being codependent. But I was, I think that's when I realized for the first time that I couldn't do, like, I didn't have control over this. And then I happened upon a magazine article where someone described themselves as a food addict, and just everything fell into place for me. And I realized that was a thing. I didn't know that was a thing. I grew up with knowing about alcoholism, and we had that in my family. And when I became a teenager and started drinking, I was like, phew, you know, like it skipped a generation. I'm not an alcoholic. I can control my alcohol. But then later just found out that I had already found my drug of choice. You know, if I got drunk, I'd just go to carbs. You know, that's like, it didn't do the same for me as, you know, sugar and carbs and food did. So when my daughter was 10 months old, I joined my first 12-step program for food addicts. And that, it wasn't OA in the beginning. It was Great Cheaters Anonymous. And I did that for 2 years. with weighing and measuring my food and reporting to a sponsor and being like very, very, very strict about it. I say 2 years with some relapses. I made it to the first 6 months was, you know, relapse after relapse. And the, you know, the last year and a half, I did like 6 months, 6 months, 6 months. But in the beginning, it was really good for me because I stopped being afraid of food. I was so afraid of food. And I started like being able to eat food, regular amounts of food, and feeling great in my body. But after a while, this started to feel to me like an extension of my eating disorder. And in the beginning, I said, like, I identify as a restrictor. And I think that's a big part of it. Like overeating maybe brought me to get some help. But restricting is always what gets me into trouble.
1 minute, Stella.
Thank you. And then at some point during my years there, I started going to OA meetings. And I have really wanted to find the exact date, but I don't know when I came into OA. It was at some point, you know, from fall of 2010 to, you know, early year 2012. And that is actually where I first, like, as I remember it, I at least did some step work that really changed my life. I had found Joe and Charlie, The Big Book Comes Alive, and all of a sudden, like, the step work just made sense to me. I understood it. And it seemed so simple, and I felt like it had been, you know, complicated, and, you know, I had been scared shitless, you know, to work the steps, and all of a sudden, like, it wasn't so scary. And then I had this fellow or temporary sponsor at OA who said, like, just write your list, like, what are you waiting for, just write. And I started writing my four-step list, and I kept writing and kept writing, and, like, when I was done, I had, like, 200 plus names on the list, and just the shock of seeing that changed me, you know, just the seeing what had been in my mind and that I hadn't been aware of, you know, the ridiculousness of it, you like just made like 95% of it go away. And I never had to like a lot of those things. I never had to finish my inventory list or take it to someone because I was like, this is ridiculous. And it went away. And then, of course, there were other things that didn't. So, you know, where I did more writing and did more talking and did more praying. And eventually, yeah, I don't know how to fast forward here, but eventually it was like it was all gone. But then what happened in terms of my food, because I think it's still very complicated when it's to do with food. And I still had to find a way to eat, and I wanted it to be in a way that I could model some good behavior for my daughter. And, you know, I sometimes say like my recovery, you know, can be summed up to like, I moved into step 11, and, you know, that's kind of where I found my daily reprieve. So I came across mindful eating and insight meditation and mindfulness, and that became, you know, my daily practices. And I started, you know, working kind of, you know, I had always been trying to control my binging. And at some point I realized that, you know, it's like a pendulum swing, and it always starts with the restricting. And I thought, if I can just stop binging, I don't have to restrict so much. And, you know, for me, there was no other way out than to stop restricting. So I had a period where actually nothing was forbidden. I could eat whatever I want. And this wasn't, you know, go ahead to binge, you know, we're talking about in a mindfulness context or in an awareness context, where I would, you know, I would just watch whatever was going on and you know, and not leave myself. And that's, you know, one of the big things that actually happened is that I'm not radical about anything in my program, other than I don't give up and, you know, radical self-love and acceptance, and everything else can change. And when I got out of the binging and purging cycle, you know, I just remember this event where I thought this was never going to stop. And it was in the period where I said, I'm not going to restrict myself. And I had eaten something. I had just thrown up. I looked myself in the mirror. I was sweaty and disgusting and felt like crap. And I just remembered my commitment to not leave myself. And I just looked at myself in the mirror and said, I love you. I love you unconditionally, no matter what. And even if this never stops, I'm not going to leave you. And things just changed. Like, it's not overnight. Like, I don't want it to sound like it just stopped overnight, but it ebbed out. That was a huge thing. It just stopped. It's kind of like, that's all I needed, you know, was me to be with myself. And then the next, you know, 10 years or something, I spent still trying to find a balance in my eating and finding myself, you know, go, you know, a little bit too much to the restricting. And then I started eating a little bit too much, but it was never this binging and purging ever again. Little bit of losing balance, a little bit of losing balance. And, you know, throughout all this, I was, you know, in and out of meetings, and I was in and out of fellowship, and, but I was always like with my spiritual practice, you know, since I did my steps, like for the first time there, over a decade ago, like I clean up my mess wherever I go. I apologize as soon as there's something that I feel like I need to apologize for. Like, I empty my mind when I feel like I need to empty my mind. And, you know, that's what I'm radical about, being, you know, being kind and being accepting and not giving up on myself. But that can look like program changing, and it does change. And I just want to say a little bit about where I am, because, you know, this was a decade ago or something like that. And now I have, I don't know, 142 days abstinence. But that doesn't mean that 143 days ago, I was completely messed up. You know, it just means that I wasn't happy, joyous, and free. And I knew that I could be, and I was missing something. And I decided to, you know, become better at going to meetings. And, you know, I sometimes think like that I wasn't allowed to find my complete balance until I had found my people. Like, I was still missing step 12 somewhere. Like, I still talked to people and I was still sharing my story, but being in an active community with fellows, you know, that has kind of, it's kind of like it's given me the last, you know, the last little you know, piece of balance or something that I needed, because, you know, this is where I really feel good and safe right now. Yeah, and I think I want to just go to some of the things that are like, you know, what I realized at the beginning of this abstinence is that, because I realized I had some behaviors in other areas of my life that were compulsive, that I needed to take care of at the same time. So I was dealing with like phone addiction as well or something. So I joined another program as well, ITAA, for support with that. And then when I was, you know, in balance there, I observed myself like buying 24 nail polishes online. and I had a lot of good, I'm like, yeah, it's 75% off. And I, you know, I kind of like, my shop doesn't carry it anymore. And like, you know, it's, I had put 36 in my basket, but I'm only checking out 24. But then I could, of course, say like, that's insanity. And I just realized that, like, whatever, thank you so much. Like, the thing that I already knew when I was 16, 17, like, it's not about the food. It's never been about the food. It's not about my body. It's never been about my body. And, you know, it's a mantra I play in my mind again and again when I think I have to do something with my food. It's, you know, food isn't this problem. Food isn't the solution. I can be compulsive about anything. And I think, you know, what I'd like to wrap up with is that, you know, we have this saying like in the program that God will remove the problem. And for me, that is true, but I also have like an alternative understanding of that. And, you know, the way I look at it is that my problem to begin with was being separated from God, was separated from a higher power. And everything else is a symptom. So what happens when the problem is fixed, the symptoms go away, but I wasn't treating the symptoms, I was treating the problem. And that's the way that makes sense to me, and why I see this as a completely a spiritual program and not a food program. And I think I ended there. Thank you so much for listening.